Hey there, Andrew McCormack with you for the Hack Podcast. It's Friday, which means this episode is the shake-up. It's half an hour where we open up the phones and hear what you think about the big stories of the week. Coming up in this episode, we'll talk about the country versus city divide after the acting PM made some comments about sending the mice plague to the inner city. We'll also talk about solutions for guys who find it hard to open up about their mental health. And we'll pick up on a chat we had in yesterday's episode, Should Billionaires Exist? Hanging out on the Shake Up today from the feed is Alice Matthews, and from 10 News First in Melbourne is Brendan Crewe. Let's get into it.
Nibble away at their food and their feet at night and scratch their children at night.
On Triple J.
This week, National leader Michael McCormack was talking about the mice plague in New South Wales, and he kind of jokingly said he wouldn't mind if the mice plague moved to the inner cities. He was making a point in reference to PETA, the animal rights group, because they want the mice killed humanely. But look, some politicians from the country seem to really love this country versus city debate. They often call young people living in the city like soft, latte-sipping lefties. But is there really a divide between the city and the country? Or is this something that politicians just love to bring up for some drama in politics, get some votes? Let me know what you think, 1300 0555 36, or text in 0439 757 555. Here's how the comments unfolded this week.
Hack. City versus country was a chance for the boys from the bush to give it to the city slickers.
I live in a community where they are ravaged as well by mice.
It might be no way to treat visitors, but the city boys are getting hostile.
And there is nothing worse than the stench of mice. There is nothing worse than having mice eat your grain.
Now the boys from the bush are beginning to wilt.
There is nothing worse than having mice running rampant around your house, around your farm, around your factory.
And fisticuffs.
And then we have, of course, PETA. The people for the ethical treatment of animals.
And it's country's ball, and he's over, yes!
Saying that the mice, the poor little curious creatures, should be rehomed. Well, I actually agree with PETA. They should be rehomed.
They really round us up and tail us up.
Into their inner city apartment so that they can nibble away at their food and their feet at night and scratch their children at night. But this is a disgrace by PETA. We always stand ready to help our farmers.
Yeah, city versus country, a lot of history there.
On Triple J.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J. I'm Ange McCormack and I'm with Alice Matthews and Brendan Crewe. Alice, you've experienced country and city life. Is this divide real or just something politicians like to talk about?
Oh my gosh, of course it's real. This mouse plague started like 10 months ago. I can almost guarantee if they were running through the walls of Parliament or through Sydney City, the issue might not have even become a plague at all. And you just have to kind of start with the physical divide between city and country. Look how expensive regional transport is, regional flights. Look at the NBN rollout in regional areas, the decimation of the newsrooms and newspapers in regional areas. When I was working in Bega, the regional roads were awful. There were mobile black spots everywhere. And it sometimes feels like the only time there kind of isn't a divide is if there is a city politician stepping in when, say, a country area just happens to be in a marginal seat during an election. And I think even Hobber and Hing mentioned just before that, you know, regional access to mental health care, awful. Regional access to abortion, awful. There is absolutely a divide.
I'm loving the passion you're bringing to the shake-up already. Alice, thank you very
much. Coming in hot on a Friday.
You are coming in red hot. Brendan, what do you think about Michael McCormack's comments and this whole debate, in quotes?
Well, I just have to start by saying this mice plague is literally my worst nightmare.
it's nightmare fuel.
And apparently they're on the move. I don't know how true that is, but
on the move. They're always scuttering around.
Yeah, it sort of feels like it's Game of Thrones and they've breached the wall and we're in King's Landing and, you know, they're on their way. But, yeah, I think what he sort of meant to say was put yourself in these farmers' shoes. They're going through hell, but maybe it didn't come out quite like that. But, yeah, I definitely do feel there is a divide between the country and the city, because I've lived in both as well.
Yeah. I think Michael McCormack was really having a go more than anyone else, PETA, that Animal Welfare Association, than necessarily city folks. But he kind of involve city folks in that argument as well. Look, on the Triple J text line, someone says, Michael McCormack always likes to pretend that city people are not real Australians, but I didn't become less Australian when I moved to the city and didn't become more Australian when I moved home. So sick of this stupid argument. Alice, how do you reckon this city-country debate might change as we get a bit more flexible after COVID? There's a lot more moving regionally. Even you've done that. You've moved out of the city.
Yeah, to be honest, I think it's already changing because we're working from home. Things are beginning to be a bit more decentralised. Even my partner's hometown has seen a few more changes, a few more cafes pop up since a lot of young people have moved back home. So I think that the divide is there, but we might see it slowly disappear, or at least I hope we do.
Yeah, and Brendan, what do you think about this politically? It kind of stinks of, you know, vote grabbing. A lot of politicians from the country rely on this argument to win votes in their areas, don't they?
Well, I lived in Kalgoorlie, which is in the middle of WA, and a lot of people there, you know, picked on people from the city. I feel like politicians can sometimes play into that whole city versus country thing to win people over in their town,
totally.
Especially if they're not from there and they've moved there. But yeah, I don't know how real that really is.
On the Triple J text line, Christian in Baxter, you say, pretty sick and tired of politicians pitting city and country folk against each other. Does Michael McCormack actually have anything to offer the nation other than hatred? It's quite a strong take there. And someone else says, let's be honest, this is a load of chest beating that does nothing but back up idiotic tribalism about what I would expect from...
You've got to love the use of the word nibble in like a furious like argument though.
Yeah, I quite like that. And someone else says, how do they expect this will work? A giant trail of bait, a pied piper. I guess they're talking about the mouse plague there. Look, there's a lot to unpack, but I think we're going to move on to men's mental health.
Hack. You know, sometimes it's just cathartic to have a talk and connect with a few guys and, you know, realise that, like I said, you're not alone.
On Triple J.
If you're having a tough time with your mental health, going to a therapist, booking in a psych appointment is a really great idea. But what if therapy doesn't feel right? What if you don't click with your psychologist? That's something a lot of men go through. This week, research found almost half of men who go to therapy drop out early. The thing about therapy, though, is if you give it a chance, not only can it work, it can save lives. If you're a guy who's had a good time in therapy, I want to hear about that. Not for me, but for the guys listening right now who don't think therapy will work for them. Call in, change some minds, 1300 055 36 or text 0439 75 7555.
Hack. We're trying to take mental health conversations to where men are, and with motorcycling, with cars, that's where they are. And it's not typically where they talk about mental health. They sit there and they talk shit, really. But we're trying to change that. We're trying to say, yeah, go have a ride, talk shit, have a drive, talk shit. But at some point, you've got to talk about something real.
I think the hardest part is just making guys feel comfortable. That's ultimately why people drop off, because we sit there and we say, I'm not getting used out of this now.
A lot of psychologists really fail to check in with their clients after that first session to see how they felt about the session, to gain that feedback.
And typically after your first session, in fact, even before you walk into that room, you know whether you're going to come back or not. You know whether you like it. You know whether this is the right place for you.
Too many clinicians hide behind that clipboard almost and just assume that they're the professional and the client should want to come back.
The best thing we can do is to just make men feel more comfortable. And whether that means changing the way that we receive people into psych practices, you know, changing the way that a reception works, changing the way that the entire system works.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J. It's The Shake-Up. I'm with Alice Matthews and Brendan Crewe. And a reminder, you can always call Lifeline on 13 11 14 if you need support. Brendan, as a guy, how does this story sit with you? What's your experience been?
Well, my experience is that I actually went to therapy when I was a teenager, and I only went once, so I'm one of those statistics. But I think for me, it was sort of like an antibiotic. You know, you're meant to take the whole sleeve, but as soon as you start feeling better, you just stop. And in hindsight, I probably should have kept going, but after the first session, I felt great, so I never went back. So, yeah, that's my experience with that. I think a lot of people sort of do the same. It takes a lot of courage to even step into that room. And if you start feeling better, then why would you go back? And also a lot of people can't afford to go to therapy. Yeah. It's really expensive. You get a few free sessions, but, you know, there's almost like a time limit on, oh, I've got five free sessions. I've got to fix all my problems by five sessions. It's a bit stressful.
Yeah, I suppose that idea of the cap on mental health care, or Medicare subsidised mental health care, I should say, perhaps reinforces that idea that you've got a limited time to fix things. What would have made you come back? You know, would it have been your psychologist maybe at the beginning saying, this is a lot of work, it's not a one-time thing, you know, you've got to put in the work for this? Like,
totally.
what would have worked for you, do you reckon?
Yeah, I think that if I'd gotten a call saying, hey, you know, because I was quite young, I was 17 years old, 18 years old maybe. Mm. If she'd called me and said, oh, you know, it's great that you're feeling great, but, you know, you've still got X amount of free sessions left. Why don't you come back once more, blah, 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 blah. Because I got along well with her. I know a lot of people don't get along with their psychologists, but I got along great with her. I thought it was great, but I just felt fine afterwards, so I didn't go back. So I think if the follow-up call is really important.
Just going to ask Brendan, how did you find that psychologist?
I loved her. She was great. And actually, I looked for her years later when I was thinking about going back to therapy.
No, but like initially, like did you seek her out or was she recommended?
Oh, she was recommended by a GP. Yeah.
Okay.
Josh, what's your story? How did you find therapy?
Ah, geez. Well, I was just going through a lot of problems, I guess, in life. I'd previously had a pretty traumatic childhood and, you know, just... wasn't dealing with a lot of things. I was turning to drugs and alcohol and, having a lot of issues with just kind of figuring out my life path.
And then you found yourself in therapy? You took that step to go?
Yeah, it's been something that my mum was always very open and honest about, that those are the sorts of things that you can work out and help out. And she's really encouraged that sort of thing throughout my life. And, I even started it when I was 12 and onwards through there, but, you know, I took a break off it for a bit and I picked it up again when I was about 23, 24. And
Has it changed your life? Like, what impact has it had?
Absolutely. Well, I've gone from, you know, working kind of a dead-end job in construction, labour sort of thing is what I thought was my, you know, only sort of path. And now I'm like... going to be starting to work to become a social worker, and I've given up, you know, smoking weed and doing all those sorts of drugs and abusing alcohol and those sorts of things. And
wow,
it's really, yeah,
that's amazing, Josh. That's so amazing. What would you say to someone who might be in a similar position to how you were, or having the kind of struggles that you had, and is thinking, nah, I don't want to go to a therapist. I don't want to talk to a psychologist.
Oh, mate, it's one of the best decisions you make. But the only thing that you've got to say is, like, you have to be completely 100% honest with yourself as well as the therapist. It doesn't work if you're just kidding yourself and you just think, oh, you know, I'm going to please somebody else or anything like that. You really need to be prepared and willing to open up and talk about some really honest stuff.
Yeah. So, and stay for longer than one session, ideally. Well,
yeah.
Josh, thank you
Miracles
so much.
Don't happen.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story, and it's really great to see it come through in a real life experience. Thank you, Josh.
Thanks,
Alice. I don't know about you, but I kind of worry about some of my male friends, the ones that find it hard to talk. As friends or as partners, how could we encourage that openness that we naturally have with our female friends? Like, how do we create those spaces where they feel safe?
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, I've got three brothers and my dad, so I have had to be in those circumstances a lot. And I've found, particularly with my dad, that it's always been easiest to have really open conversations when we weren't just sitting face-to-face, confronting each other eye-to-eye, because that's actually a really tough confrontational environment to be in. So whenever we've had our good chats, it's been when... you know, we're driving in a car or watching a campfire or going fishing, and I find that kind of informal, less threatening way already feels normal. So it's less contrived to be like, let's sit down and tell me how you feel.
Just like doing something with your hands, like I feel like it just frees you up a lot. Like just not to be staring at each other in the eyes. Like it's that thing of just, getting out of that really intense space. On the Triple J text line, Peter from Bundy, you say, I'm going through issues at the moment and going to my second psych appointment tomorrow, which I'm contemplating cancelling. This story hits hard for me. So many truths and things I 100% relate to. Well, Peter, thanks for the text. I encourage you not to cancel that appointment. As you've heard from Josh's story, it works. Go there. Good luck. Stretch, you've called in. What's your story?
More just like in living in rural areas, sometimes it's actually hard to get to talk to people. I live in a small town in Western Queensland, and I think the last time I knew there was a therapist in town, she only came to town maybe two or three times a week. You had to go to the local doctor to get a referral and then try and make an appointment. So at times, trying to actually get to see to someone is not real easy, and you can call up to a lot of the services and that, but sometimes talking to someone over the phone isn't really the same. So it's hard to find people, suppose, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, I can imagine that's such a struggle regionally with all kinds of healthcare. And then, I imagine they'd often offer up the method of doing Zoom, but that also feels a bit, I don't know, and just not as intimate.
It's sort of kind of impersonal, I suppose. Like, you can see them, you can talk to them, but it's just that kind of like a technology barrier, I suppose, the best way to put it. Like, you can't really sort of get the feel of it, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Stretch, thanks so much for calling in, and hope you can keep getting the help you need in regional Australia. Thanks for raising that really important issue. James, you've called in. What's your experience?
I've kind of been on both sides as someone who needed help and who's been professionally and unprofessionally a helper. There isn't one right or wrong way, depending on someone's situation. Someone could go to a psychologist and they don't feel that connection. Someone can go to a group of guys or group of girls, girlfriend. There's not one answer. And if someone's feeling like I've done, I was calling Lifeline for a fair few weeks in one period of time. That didn't help. I went to the psychologist. That didn't help. For me, I flipped the switch. I did it internally and then was able to help others. And by helping others, I got better.
Sorry, James, what do you mean you flipped the switch? How did you work on that yourself?
Again, I don't want to sound like there's some sort of magic button there. It was a really hard switch to flick. But I made the decision to stop hurting about a certain situation. And I did. I literally the next day became happier. I'd made different choices. I did habits. I went exercising. I'm now doing this. Today I'm now being the person I want to be. I don't want to be that upset. And it doesn't mean that the things that upset me just went away magically, like I had some spell. But everyone does have choices and everyone can make that choice. And it's not an easy choice. I'm not trying to belittle that it's that simple. But if there's people out there and listening and going, God, my psychologist didn't help. Often a psychologist, you don't feel the connection because they're there to keep you needing them.
Well, James,
for a lot of people.
I'm finding all the callers today so emotional and, really great callers. Beautiful.
Regardless of men's help, anybody, anyone who's listening, if there's people you need to reach out to, do so. And, if they help you, then great. But, you also have it within you to take control and make choices. And, sometimes you need that help. Sometimes you just have to listen to yourself and make a better habit. And I don't mean that derogatory or negatively to anyone. It just worked for me.
No, that's amazing, James. Alice, can you take it from here while I collect myself? Thank you, James.
An incredible thing to hear these guys calling up and being able to, like James, articulate so well this concept of reframing and sort of searching within yourself. And it's amazing to have these conversations on a national platform. Forget my idea of going for a drive. Like, what we need is more guys like this calling up and just totally normalizing these discussions.
Yeah.
I think it's gotten really better in recent years as well. We've got Movember, you know, everyone's embracing Are You OK Day. There's lots of men's sheds in regional areas as well for that caller who's in the regions. There's often men's sheds where guys get together and build things, and that's a way that they can connect. So I think the conversation is always getting better and always growing, which is great to see.
Yeah, and Brendan, like those alternative options that you mentioned there, those blokey options like the men's shed, they're often like billed as these blokey nights over beers. Mm. Or yesterday we talked about this group that works around motorcycles. I wonder though, do those groups and the way they market them kind of add to the idea that men always have to be in these super masculine spaces to be comfortable and to open up?
Well, I think that they're marketed like that because those are the groups of people who are hardest to open up, because, you know, other men, maybe, you know, men in queer spaces or other spaces that are more open don't have a problem talking about their mental health. But it's really the, you know, the toxic masculinity that is stopping people from opening up, and it's seeming weak, etc. But it's great to see. I mean, the other day on Instagram, I saw a post by Bailey Smith from the Bulldogs. He posted something, which is an AFL player, you know, masculine field, about embracing all types of men's health, and you know you can't just look after blokey blokes. You've got to look after everyone, and men in dresses and everything. So it's yeah, getting out there. The word's getting out there.
Yeah.
I don't think it's bad to approach things in a, you know, quote masculine way, as long as it isn't toxic. Because if that's what's effective, that's what's effective. And it's often from your own kind of microculture that you form your own culture around things, whether that's your rugby league club or your motorcycle club or your ballet school. Like if it can start there before it broadens out to this wide sweeping cultural change, like that's probably where all the cultural change starts.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J. I'm Ange McCormack. I'm with Alice Matthews and Brendan Crew. On the Triple J text line, Jason, you say, I went to therapy on and off for 10 years. I had a lot of issues early on connecting with a therapist, and one of the biggest deterrents was the financial cost. Eventually, I did find one after 5 different therapists. That, I suppose, goes to the idea that was raised before by one of the callers about trying different methods, finding what works for you. The caller that talked about, you know, flipping a switch, that won't work for everyone. And I think, you know, going to seek professional help is a great place to start. If that doesn't work for you, maybe try a different therapist. Maybe, you know, try something else, a different method. But let's move on to another caller. Isaac, what's your experience been?
Hi. I saw a psychologist in my early 20s because I was feeling a lot of depression. Mm-hmm. And I only saw him for one session. And then just last year, decided to see a therapist again, a psychologist, and I'm still seeing him now. He's been absolutely amazing. Mm. I've completely changed my life.
That's so amazing. And like, did you go into that being a little bit cynical about the process and thinking maybe it wouldn't work?
When I had my first session with the new psychologist, I was very scared, actually, about what was going to happen, because I thought it might fail or that he was going to expose me in some sort of way, which is kind of strange. But you know, I think he really understands me as a person, and our sessions are very helpful. I only see him once every 6 weeks now, but at the start it was once every 2 weeks. Unfortunately, I've had some family members who have seen psychologists and given up after one or two sessions because they feel like they haven't got a good enough therapist, and I think that might be part of the problem.
Well, Isaac, thanks so much for sharing your story. It's a really good message to send that therapy works. It's life-changing. That's what we want to hear. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
On the Triple J text line, someone says, imagine if Medicare said there was only 20 doses of chemo available each financial year for each person. Mental health care pit people into one mid that doesn't fit every individual. It's so generic. That's from Jen in Coffs Harbour. All right, let's move on to our last topic.
Hack. In the past few years, it seems to have become increasingly popular to resent the rich.
Billionaires should not exist. Should not exist.
Every time a billionaire even hints at doing something charitable, we treat them like saints.
On Triple J.
What would you do if you were a billionaire? Would you give it all away? Would you use it to help fight climate change? or poverty or homelessness or just live it up, maybe solve the mental health issues we've been talking about. This week we've been asking, should billionaires exist and how can extreme wealth work in society? I want to know what you think and what you'd spend big on if you had all that cash. Call in 1300 055 36 or text 0439 75 7555.
Hack. Billionaires. Billionaires.
Billionaires. Warren and I are glad in whatever way to pay a fair bit more in taxes.
Billionaires. Billionaires.
And it is important to separate out the question of, should rich people pay more in taxes? The answer is yes.
Millionaires.
Millionaires. Millionaires.
For whatever remainder of money they have left over, I do think philanthropy is a good thing.
Billionaire. Billionaire. Billionaire.
But what do you think of this larger idea that underneath all of this, you hear people who say there shouldn't be billionaires?
You know, maybe I'm just too biased to think that if you create a company that's super valuable, that at least some part of that you should be able to have.
Billionaires, billionaires, billionaires.
To make that kind of money, the average American wage earner would have to work 2.8 million years.
Billionaires, billionaires, a billionaire.
That's 10 times longer than humans have actually existed in their modern form, right?
Billionaires, billionaires, billionaires.
At that point, you can say, look, if this system is producing that kind of accumulation of wealth in individuals, something has gone wrong with that system.
Billionaires, 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 billionaires.
So many billionaires in that little audio mash. You're listening to Hack on Triple J. We have been talking about billionaires on our Instagram this week already. To that question about should they exist, someone said people love to claim they'd give away their money when they were a billionaire, but ego and greed are human nature. Money changes people. Someone else said, as a millennial, I don't want billions. I just want to be able to afford a house. Someone else said, if I earn my billions, I have the right to do whatever I want with it. You're all just jealous. And someone else said, seems lonely yet very lit at the top. Alice, should billionaires exist? Is it a lonely existence?
No, nobody needs that much money. And to that texter's point, it's like, yeah, you have the right to do whatever you want with that money, but you also have the moral obligation to help other people and fulfill your societal duty when you have that much money. And call me a communist, but share it around.
Brendan, what kind of billionaire would you be? What would you spend it on?
Well, you know, they say money can't buy happiness, but I'd rather cry in a Ferrari, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we can relate. But you don't need $1 billion to buy a Ferrari. Like, I don't know how much you need. Not a lot.
Well, you know, millennials, $1 billion would buy a lot of avocados, so.
Yeah, they're pretty cheap at the moment, though. Robbie, you've called in. You're an aspiring billionaire. What's your thoughts?
I wouldn't say aspiring billionaire, but aspiring entrepreneur.
Okay.
I just have a massive issue with people being against them because while you walk out to your car wearing your Nike shoes and Calvin Klein underwear and hop into your car and then drive down to a Starbucks to enjoy $5 coffee, while scrolling on your iPhone on Facebook and you come across an Amazon ad.
So you're pointing out all these billion-dollar businesses that are improving our that we all enjoy, right?
Yeah.
But do the people
nifty things?
I get that. I get that. A lot of billionaires have created, you know, products that we love. But do they need to have that much money?
The thing is, they acquired it through giving everybody what they wanted, right? Okay. So billionaires are only billionaires because you and I have given them the money.
Mm.
So only society has given them money. No one else gave them money. Only society did.
Don't you think that they should share it?
Of course, absolutely. Okay. And a lot of them do. A lot of
you
them.
You are a good.
All right.
A lot of them do. And, okay. And the issue is, so many people think that it's greedy, which they're not.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah,
well, thanks for
when they share it, we have to also remember that they have the power and the decision making to decide who and what to share it with.
Exactly.
So. Do I trust that? Probably not.
All right. Well, Robbie, thanks for making the point that they got their wealth fairly. They deserve it, that sort of thing. Thanks so much for calling in. Someone on our Instagram today said, show me a billionaire that works harder than a nurse, teacher, single mum. Brendan, a lot of people respect people that work hard and have this wild success. That caller was just a prime example of that. But what do you think this whole idea says about the type of work that we reward and the work that always stays at minimum wage?
Well, I mean, maybe there can be a cap on it, you know. Once you earn $999 million, you know, anything above that goes towards nurses or teachers or anything like that. But, I mean, what sort of regime would that be?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have raised that cap idea. I thought, you know, when you get your ATAR, like no one's allowed to get 100 in the ATAR, but you can get 99.95. So if you get 99.95, yep, cool, you've won, great, great achievement, but you're not getting $1 billion. I don't know if that's a crazy idea. What do you think, Alice?
Oh, I just think that we don't even tax rich people after they die. And if we did that, we would have billions of dollars to spend on nurses' wages, on universal childcare and things like that. So I just think if we can't do that, which is really basic, we're probably never going to put a cap on things, which is just
Well, Alice, that's all we've got time for today. Alice Matthews, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Ange. You have a beautiful heart and it's so lovely to hear it.
Thanks, Alice. And Brendan Crewe, thanks for making your Hack Shake-Up debut. Great
thanks for having me. It's been so much fun.
Hack on Triple J.
Thanks so much for listening to the Hack podcast. I'll catch you again tomorrow.